Okay, so we are now very happy to be joined today by Peter Boyle. Peter is a member of Socialist Alliance, and he's also a regular writer for Green Left. He's also one of our recurring guests that we often have on our program, you know, to talk about a lot of topics in relation to anti-capitalist ideas. Now, Peter's been working on a series of articles, and in fact, the first one is currently published on Green Left, and there'll be a second one published next week. But he's been responding to this whole issue of Australia becoming a green superpower, and this is one of the Albanese government's sort of ambitions. So good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
So, kind of to start off, what can you tell us about Labor's and so-called ambition, or almost even like buzzword talk, about Australia becoming a green superpower? And why do you think there are serious dangers with this plan?
Well, you know, I think it's an echo here. Sorry. I think that this is just another case of rich white people dreaming. Colonial dreaming, to be specific. Eco-socialists such as Jason Hickel have argued before quite strongly that many dreams for green growth that originate in the global north are colonial in character because they tend to presume a continuation of the colonial relations, imperialist relations in the world. And what renewable energy is used for really matters. And if green capitalism and dreams such as this to turn Australia into a green superpower mean simply continuing the colonial relations rich countries like Australia, have with the majority countries in the world, that's not a good thing because it's all based on organising production around the continuation of accumulation, capital accumulation, elite consumption rather than meeting human need and addressing the urgent environmental challenges. And with this, of course, doesn't just come, you know, SUV, this is the joke, you know, rich white folk dreaming in the global north that, you know, they can drive electric SUVs and that's the future. But also comes with it the stuff like plan obsolescence and the military industrial complex. Unfortunately, I think a number of environment NGOs in Australia, including the Climate Council, Climate Action Network Australia, Beyond Zero Emissions, and even trade unions such as the Australian Manufacturing Workers Unions have been pushing this concept of turning Australia into a green superpower for some time. And now, under the Anthony Albanese Labor government, it has been officially embraced. And since the May budget, it is also being funded under the Future Made in Australia program. Now, all these groups that have been lobbying for turning Australia into a green superpower, imagine that they're advising the billionaire class how it can best profit out of a transition to renewable energy. But they're kidding themselves. The billionaire class already sees the potential. Way back in the early 1990s, a former senior Exxon executive told me quite bluntly, hey, companies like Exxon already have plans to shift to renewable energy after they've fully exploited fossil fuel reserves. And the proof is there. In the 7 years since the Paris Agreement was adopted, the world's 60 largest private banks have financed fossil fuels with US $6.9 trillion, a study has found. And nearly half of that has gone into fossil fuel expansion, despite the acknowledgement that there's absolutely no room for new fossil fuels if we're going to have any chance of reaching net zero by 2050. So the billionaire class has made its profit-first plans for transition clear, and the world is already suffering the climatic impact. Of course, disproportionately suffering in the global south. Now, these dreams, because now they're becoming official government policy, are turning into money, money in the form of subsidies for big business. Labor allocated $22.7 billion in public money over the next decade to Future Made in Australia program. Now, this program is very vague, but fundamentally, as the budget says, it's about maximizing the economic and industrial benefits of the net zero transformation and securing Australia's place in a changing global economic and strategic landscape. Now, this is basically you know, officially for saying we want to keep Australia going in a future renewable energy world as one of the world's imperialist superpowers.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. How's that echo now? Has it gone?
It's better.
Okay, great. You touched on this a bit, but in your article, you write that Labor's plan is enmeshed with support for a massive expansion of the gas extraction, but and also the and the export industry, but also the military industrial complex. Could you tell us more about this?
It's absolutely enmeshed, and it's becoming more and more explicit. It was pretty explicit in the budget. It's becoming more and more explicit as discussion, which is now ongoing because the legislation for Future Made in Australia is, you know, yet to be passed through Parliament. It will become very clear over the next few months. This is totally enmeshed with two things. One, it's planned to continue expanding gas extraction and gas export. And secondly, its plans, which has taken on from the former Liberal government, to make Australia one of the top 10 arms and military technology exporters. And, of course, there's a perverse logic to this. If Australia is to become a green superpower, it needs the military might to enforce that privileged status, albeit in partnership with the United States and other imperialist allies. Now, we know, and I think, you know, activists have been campaigning against this directly, that so much, you know, millions of dollars are already flowing liberally from Australian public money to the world's biggest companies. And the lion's share has gone to Israel's Elbit system, you know, right in the middle of this genocide. Now, the Australian Institute calculated last May that federal and state governments gave $14.5 billion in subsidies to fossil fuel producers last year. And that's the equivalent of 27,581 for every minute of every day, or $540 for every person. That's a lot of money basically going into fossil fuel expansion. And Labor has allocated over the next 3 years $54 billion for more fossil fuel subsidies, five times the amount it's committed to its, you know, pretty weak Housing Australia Future Fund, you know, the $10 billion one over the next the same period of time. So, you know, this is what is going on now. It's enmeshed in not just in concept-wise, but as the plans for how this all these subsidies to business become clearer and more clearly defined in the legislation enabling the Future Made in Australia program, you will see how it's, you know, it's also going to help fossil fuels and the arms industry. In fact, the fossil fuel companies are already have begun their campaign to argue for the legislation to make it clear that in the name of the transition, it can subsidize their expansion. You know, it's in the public discussion now. They've begun the debate even before we've heard from almost anyone else. Fossil fuel companies are in there saying, you know, part of this money that's going to be allocated for turning Australia into a green superpower is going to come to us, right? So, and it's a joke, right? It's a joke.
Hello, Peter. Yes, this is Rob from Melbourne Socialist Alliance.
Hi.
So Australia is a green superpower. This is a complete grammatical contradiction. Just stop and think about it. How can you be green and be a superpower? Okay, so that's my little linguistic joke there, but just forget these niceties. What does this mean for ordinary people? I'll answer that. Disaster. But, Peter, I do have a question for you, and that is, how on earth does the ALP even get away with this?
Well, you know, it's been getting away with this sort of stuff for a long time, right? This is not the first grand plan that the ALP has championed, supposedly to improve the profits of the capitalist class in this country, right? You go back in time. Think of the kind of rich white man dreaming that Labor championed that led to the Accord, that actually gutted the trade union movement. It was based on the idea, all right, they're giving you, you know, they're giving you this grand plan, how you can make money in the future. particularly from selling stuff to Asia and taking advantage of the rise of the new middle class in China and India to sell Australian education. And the end result of it, of course, you know, is the destruction of the Australian education system, conversion into a profits industry, and the destruction of the trade union movement. So it's not the first time that Labor has jumped on an idea like this. This is just a new version of it, and it's built around a pretense of trying to bring on to speed up transition to renewable energy. And in reality, it both justifies the continuation of fossil fuel extraction, distorts any transition that will happen in a dangerous manner. I'd like to come back to this later on. And it's in mesh with the idea of arming up Australia, increasing its military might and its place in the US military domination.
Okay. So Peter, you've been kind of talking a lot about kind of like making references to green capitalism. And I guess this kind of ties into, I think, the kind of next question, which is really from an anti-capitalist perspective, why is a private sector-based transition to renewable energy a fundamentally dangerous idea? And in fact, it's really one of that principle is really one of the basic tenets of capitalism and green.
Well, I would say, even from a purely environmental perspective, it's a very dangerous idea. One, history teaches it that corporate profit dictated development might deliver bigger profits for the corporations, but certainly does not serve social need. Not in this country, and certainly not globally. I mean, colonialism and imperialism demonstrates that. Secondly, a capitalist profit-driven transition to renewable energy will actually suck resources away from the kind of projects that are urgently needed today. When I mean resources away, I don't just mean sucking away the government subsidies that are going to flow into whatever the billionaires decide they want to do, but also all the private savings of individuals and banks and super funds. We're talking trillions of dollars here. They are going to be sucked along in it. Also, all the raw materials are going to be diverted away from stuff that needs to be done to whatever the billionaires think needs to be done. All the skilled labor that's going to be sucked away in it, and the energy. Because, of course, you've got to understand, it's costing energy. It's going to cost energy to do the transition, and a lot of this energy that will have to be used in this is going to be fossil fuel energy. Got to be wise about it in any rational world about how that energy is spent. We're going to gamble it on spending it in the direction that the billionaires want. And thirdly, we just don't have the time. We don't have the time to gamble on a billionaire twisted transition to renewables. We've got to have the money going in where it's needed right now. And I unfortunately, this sort of dreaming that is embedded in the concept of Australia as a green superpower, it's completely to make the transition hostage to whatever the billionaires want, the directions they want to set.
I like how you've included in your article quotes from other eco-socialists like Jason Hickel, who have argued that, what renewable energy is used for matters, and that green capitalism really means turning the global south into a giant sacrifice zone so rich folks in the global north can drive electric SUVs. we wanted to hear some of your comments, Peter, on what an alternative energy policy looks like from a socialist perspective.
Yes, I'm working on a follow-up article which is going to expand on this. But in the last article, I started to give them some examples of one aspect of this. First of all, our vision for a renewable energy, which I think the Australian people will embrace, is one based on immediately both addressing the needs to shift to renewables, but also addressing the urgent social needs. And the example which I used in the last article is a program around housing. Now, supposing we had a program in this country, well-funded, for expanding public housing on the basis of retrofitting all the existing public housing to good quality, fully sustainable housing, you know, that is fitted out with renewable energy, well-sealed, you know, all the principles that are already there to make, you know, literally you could have a house that is both wonderful and comfortable to live in, and you wouldn't have any electricity bills. How about that? We retrofit on a mass scale these, and we build a large number of new housing units on the same principle. Now, that would be a good use of money instead of, say, sending that money to Twiggy Forest or some other billionaire and let them go and spend it on a dream to, you know, one of their dreams is to have a mega solar farm in non-territory, then lay a cable to Singapore and flog renewable energy to Asia. That's the rich white man dreaming, you know. Mm. And instead of resources that government is going to that, what about we get one that immediately addresses both climate change issues and also addresses the housing crisis? How about currently one-third of Australian households have got solar energy in it, but it's going back into the grid. The grid's complaining. Some of the energy companies are wanting to charge them for giving them free electricity, or they're trying to shut them down. What if we had a program to build, neighborhood batteries where not only people could safely store in a public, collectively owned battery, but they could share their surplus electricity that they're producing from their solar panels with neighbors who don't have solar panels, don't have enough energy because they've got big families, whatever. So that's one idea that I have. You know, like if you can have a vision of green transition that doesn't that simultaneously addresses immediate social need. Now, this is a very powerful idea because it means that you could have a popular swing towards green energy, and with that comes many things. It answers the question of, where does money come from? You know, I heard this story a long time ago, very interesting. A woman who was growing up in a coal mining area in the Hunter Valley area, and when she was young and she got her first job, and she bought government bonds so that they could build power stations. They were coal power stations because they didn't have, you know, regular electricity out there in the country. She invested it because she thought it was a good thing. And when I met her, she was convinced that we had to shift to renewable energy. This is a woman now who spent a whole life working life in a coal district. And she said, if I was a young person today starting my first job, I'd be happy to buy green bonds with the government to fund their transition to renewable energy. So a very publicly popular campaign that addresses environment would be readily funded by the ordinary people. Of course, we don't control a lot of our savings in this country. It goes into super funds and banks, and then they give it to the billionaires, right? And we had a report recently saying even the banks that promise, we're going to invest in renewables, not going to invest in fossil fuels, they've been sneakily, they found a secret way of putting money into fossil fuels. So that's the first part. The second part, which I want to develop, you know, an idea for the future, if you like, it also suggests a new name, an alternative buzzword to green superpower. How about Australia have a vision of becoming a green, good neighbour in the region?
Mm.
And I think at the heart of this, I have this idea you can expand and build upon the concept underlying Cuba's, you know, famous people-to-people medical aid, you know, where it has then the doctors instead of gunboats and military aid and to poor countries and taken people from countries like Timor-Leste and trained them to be doctors in Cuba. I mean, that's the basis of how we could imagine the future. We don't want to have, you know, have renewable energy resources or technology that we can then withhold ourselves and make money out of the rest of the people. I mean, it's actually self-defeating. Now, given the time frame that we have to address the climate change crisis, which is a global crisis, you know, the rational thing to do would be to roll out and to share renewable energy and renewable technology as fast and efficiently as possible with our neighbors. And this would actually then remove the need to do the opposite, just what Australia is pursuing today, that instead of building peace and good relations with your neighbors through people-to-people aid, you know, what we're doing now is we're arming up so that we can say to our neighbors, look, do what we want or we'll blow you to pieces. Right? So I think that there's a concept here that perhaps can be built on habit. Instead of imagining us, Australia, having a future as a green superpower, what about having one as a green good neighbour?
That's a good point. Oh, sorry, Rob, did you want to say something?
Very quickly, good neighbour. Yes, thanks, Peter. Good neighbour. Why don't we talk about a bad enemy when you think of the interventions in the Pacific? So, yeah, anyway, good point, Peter, to highlight the complete hypocrisy of Australia's role in the region.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point to end on as well. Peter, thanks for joining us. It's always good to have you on the show, and people can read Peter Boyle's entire article on the dangers of green superpower capitalist dreaming on greenleft.org.au. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.